Thanks all of God's people. This is again Monica Joseph. We're today in lesson 162. In the last lesson, we came to the point where Amalek was coming against Israel. And again, when you have the background of why he came there, you will understand what was really happening here. Amalek was the grandson of Esau, and he was from the firstborn of Esau, Eliphaz, and he was also the son of Timnah, which was a princess, a daughter of the ruler of Mount Seir, Seir the Horite, that was his name. And therefore he saw, as time went by, obviously, and the way it happens in those days, where the firstborn always has the preeminence, and he felt that he, being the son of a princess and the son of the grandson, that is, of Esau, and his firstborn, he should be the one to contend for the birthright. And so, while Edom was in his territory, Amalek, being a son of the second wife, she was not even the first wife of Eliphaz, but nevertheless, she was a princess, remained behind in that territory, and having those feelings that that land belongs to him, that territory belongs to him. And of course, at the time, he could not lay claim to the land of Canaan because all the Canaanites were still there. So he was on the southern border, the southern part of it, in the Negev, and in that desert area, right under the main party of, you might say, of the Edomites. And so when he saw Israel coming up, he says, uh-oh, here comes the contender for the birthright, and I'm not going to let them get away with it. And so this is the background to what we see here. And so that's what we read in Exodus 17, in verse 8, then came Amalek and fought. You see, otherwise he had no reason to do that unless you understand what is really behind it. And so Amalek comes down to fight Israel in Rephidim. And this was the very place where Israel arrived, and they had problems with water, and God tried and tested them over there and gave them water, and he was going to find out whether they are obedient to him or not. And so soon after that, this is what's happening. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men, and go out, fight with Amalek. And tomorrow, he said, I will send on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. Now, this whole thing is a very, very interesting thing, because never, ever would you ever see or read an account of this sort with the people of God. And never, ever will you read an account like that ever after. And so it is a very, very important event to notice and to realize and to understand what is really happening here. Why is Moses standing and that is on the mount and basically giving this instruction to Moses that we are going to read here? And so Joshua in verse 10 did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And so he went to battle. He went to war against the Amalekites. And mind you, these Israelites are not used to fighting. They are slaves. And yet, there is an awful lot here behind the scene that God is not recording, but when you understand and you put the whole picture together, you begin to realize the picture. What is really going on here? Just immediately proceeding to this war, as we read earlier, well, actually, we just mentioned that, but in the beginning of the chapter, the Israelites are tempting God, in essence. They are asking, is there a God among us? And so that also is a part of what is happening here. God is going to show them that he is among them. And so he allows Amalek to come over here. And of course, Amalek has his own reasons to come down and do what he wants to do. And so we read in verse 10, so Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And this is again, the first experience of war of the children of Israel, who were not used to war. And so God is causing them to go and do something instead of complaining. And he was going to show them that he will be with them. And so Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill, and it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. And which is very interesting also, God was teaching them a lesson, that if you the ones, you know, who were doubting, is there God among us? If you look up to God, you know, and symbolically Moses was there raising his arms, they were looking forward up to God for deliverance, for help, they will be delivered. But if they are taking their eyes off God, and symbolically Moses is picturing that by raising his hands, then obviously they are not going to win the battle. And so that's already a part of it. But again, this whole thing is very, very strange. And when we read the rest of the story, not only what happened right after that, but also to this very day, we would realize what is happening here is very, very momentous. And God is recording for all mankind to read something very interesting here about Amalek and about his personal dealing with this person, and about what Amalek is going to do also in the future to Israel when they take their eyes off God. And that's in essence what is happening today in the Middle East. And this is a part of the story of the origin of the Middle Eastern conflict, which is still going on to this very day. So this was the beginning of it from the point of view of Amalek, from this player who was the grandson of Esau. So he was not totally Edomite, he was half Edomite. But again, being the firstborn of the firstborn of Esau, he is seeking the birthright. And to this very day, we're going to see that happening. And so we read here in verse 12, "But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him. And he sat on it." After all, the war goes on for quite a while, and after a while you get tired. "And so he sat on it, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands." I mean, he was getting pretty tired. After all, he's not a young man. He's in his 80s. And so he needs some help there in holding his hands up, which is very interesting. Obviously, God is the one that is behind it. Moses is not just inventing something. And so we always have to look about everything that we read here from the point of view of God. What is really happening here? And as we continue, we shall see. God is showing us something very interesting here. And so Moses gets tired, and Aaron and Hur are holding his hands up. On one hand, that is on either side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So the war goes on all day, and Moses sits there all day, and he's holding his hands all day. Now before that, whenever God wanted to deliver his people, whenever he wanted to perform a miracle, all Moses had to do is just lift up his rod, and that's it. In this case, it is done totally differently. And Israel constantly, as they are fighting Amalek, have to constantly watch Moses. And they have constantly to look up to God also, and to hope that the hands of Moses will constantly be raised up. And when you look at that, you know, you think, well, this is very strange. Why would God do a thing like that? Why does it happen in this way? Well, everything that is happening here is very, very important. And so we should notice every detail. And so we read in verse 13, "And Joshua," and that's at the end of the day, "discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword." Now, the most important thing that we're going to read here in verse 14. "And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in the book," that is the book of the law, "and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And why is he saying that? You know, the war is over, Amalek was defeated, but God is recording here something that is going to do something for generations to come. And there is a reason behind it. And so, we read here in verse 15, "And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Adonai Nisi." In other words, the Lord, my banner. And the one that performs the word Nes also means miracle. So the one who performs the miracle. And God is the one that has performed the miracle where Israel, a slave people, was able to overcome a tribe that was already by now well experienced in war and was a sort of a tribe that was a nomad tribe and specialized in this kind of, you might say, modern terminology of terrorism, terrorizing people and robbing them of their possessions, and generally not in a way like an army, you know, they go front to front and they fight another army, but generally in a very, very, you might say, honorable manner. And they do it not by going, as I said, face to face their enemy, but behind the scenes. In other words, when the enemy is not watching, when the enemy is not strong, when the enemy is in a moment of weakness. And that's their mode of operation, and has been always like that. As you study constantly, the way they constantly dealt with the children of Israel and others, they were not very, very brave people that go, you know, face to face, but generally they try to pick at your weak, you know, weakest point. And that's in essence what terrorists are doing, you know. They go when nobody is watching them, and they do it behind the scenes, so to speak. And that's how they do their damage. And so when you consider the whole matter, you know, what is Amalek up to? Who is Amalek? Why is he doing what he's doing? And what he was doing, going to do in the future also, you realize what is happening here. And so God says, you write that. Write that in a book. I, not you, I'm the one personally who's going to take it upon myself personally. Well, I'm going to blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Now, there has never been a nation on the face of the earth or a people or an enemy of Israel where God ever said that. Why is he saying that? What is really happening here? Who is this people? You see? You have to consider all these matters to understand what is happening today in the Middle East, to understand the origin of the conflict in the Middle East. And most people who have no knowledge of that, who do not study the Bible, don't study the whole story, do not realize what is really happening, having no context, no background, they just have that simplistic approach of thinking that the whole problem there is a matter of Ishmael, Isaac, or Hagar, Sarah issue. And it's not a correct picture of what is really happening here. And so we read that Moses built an altar, and he called that altar Adonai Nisi, the Lord is my banner, or Yehovah Nisi, that's what he called it, and he explained why. And he said, the hand upon the throne of the Lord. In other words, he's describing here that God put his hand upon his throne, and he swore by his throne. And this is what he's saying. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. You see? In other words, God has sworn by his own name. I personally am going to have a war, and you might say in this case, a holy war. This is the first jihad. You know, you hear about the jihad in the Middle East. Whenever the Arabs, you know, want to wipe out the Jews, they talk about jihad, a holy war. Well, the first holy war against them was proclaimed by God himself. And he said he's going to carry it from generation to generation. And there is a reason why he doesn't do it all in one time. Because he's using also Amalek when the eyes of Israel are not upon him to come and smite the people of Israel. And when the people of Israel set their eyes on their God and trust in him and walk in his path and his ways, obviously he's going to win the battle for them and defeat Amalek. So Amalek was going to be used from now on as a whipping rod against Israel. And from the point of view, of Amalek, he wants the birthright. He's the firstborn. And so he's going to contend for it whenever he can, one way or the other. And generally not in a brave manner. And those are the tactics of the Amalekites. And we're going to read more about it, how they do things later on. And so this is a part of the story. And people who do not know that, they don't really comprehend what is really happening here. And so we continue with the story to the book of Numbers. And at this point, in the book of Numbers, in chapters 22 to 24, Israel is right on the border there, and Moab is getting very worried about it, and that's when Balak, the king of Moab, is calling on Balaam, the prophet, from Babylon, from the east, between the rivers, to come and curse Israel. And this man, a very interesting man, people oftentimes don't think about it, they think that God is dealing only with Israel, and the only prophets that ever exist are among Israel. And here is an example that there are prophets also outside of Israel, of the people of Israel that God dealt with, and who knows how many others throughout the entirety of men's history where God dealt with, but it was not recorded. In this case, this is recorded. Well, God himself is very well known to this person, and mind you, as we mentioned earlier, the people of Babylon were not in total ignorance of the God of heaven and earth, or the God of creation. They were not ignorant of his law. And so to one degree or the other, many of them were worshippers of this God and other gods also. They were not totally ignorant of him. And some of them were more devout and closer to him than others. And this man was a man that was a prophet. And if he was well known throughout the entirety of the area, not only in Babylon, but here it is in Moab. And you have to understand, you know, how does Balak know about it? You see, Balak is the son of a Moabite, who was the son of Lot, the nephew of Abraham. And they all came from this territory where now this prophet is. And so there is links there. You know, there are links here between these people of Moab and the people back there, because this is where they came from. These are the same people. Sometimes we don't think about these things, and so we don't realize what is really happening here. And so he's calling, in essence, on a relative of his people, you see. And he's well known for a man who has links and contacts with God. And therefore, when he blesses, a blessing comes upon people. And when he curses, a curse comes upon people. And that's the reason why he's calling upon him. And so he's coming here, and you know, you can read the whole story there. We don't need to deal with that. Only the part of Amalek and also Edom, because they're all linked. And then we read in chapter 24, at the end of all this episode, you know, with Balak and Balaam and the cursing of Israel, supposedly, but which turned into blessings, because God came and spoke to him and talked to him, and he was very well aware of God, and he spoke to God. You see, it was sort of a matter of fact that God is always dealing with this man. Also, he was very angry at him because, on top of that, he was also a very greedy person, and therefore God was very angry with him when he told him not to go, and he wanted to go anyway. And then he said, well, I'm going to use you anyway in that way. So he allowed him to go. And then you remember the story about the donkey. Anyway, all those things show you the special link here between these peoples and what God was doing here with people who are not a part of Israel. Just like he came and spoke to Pharaoh, you know, the days of Abraham, and he came and spoke to Abimelech in the days of Abraham. You see that God is dealing also with other peoples beside the children of Israel. And how many times he's been dealing, you know, with many other personalities on the face of the earth, only God knows. Sometimes we forget that, and we have this narrow-minded approach that God deals only with one single people and very few people. And some develop the attitude, you know, it's only me and you, God, or God speaks only through me and nobody else. And Peter made it very plain, you know, when he dealt with Cornelius. He said, of a truth, I perceive that God is not a respecter of person, but in every nation, where there is somebody who fears him and trembles at his word, you know, God has respect for him. You see? And God had respect to many people outside of the confine of the people of Israel. And here with Balaam, we see this case. And so, at the end of the story here, Balaam is saying to Balak that I'm going to tell you what's going to happen at the end of time. And so we're going to read here about what he says about Edom at the end time, and the end time of the story of Israel, and also about Amalek. And so we read in chapter 24, and we're going to start here in verse 14, where in essence is prophesying the end time history of Israel and what God is going to do not only to Israel or for Israel, but also for the other peoples around Israel who are now and have been for a long time enemies of Israel. He said, "And now behold, I go unto my people." In other words, I'm going back now because I cannot curse and you're not going to pay me anyway. But I'm going to let you know, I'm going to announce to you what the people shall do to your people in the end of days, in the latter days. So nice talking about the end time. And he took up his parable and said, the saying of Balaam the son of Beor and the saying of the man whose eyes opened. Verse 16, the saying of him who hears the words of Elohim. You see, he has this contact with God. Actually, he says the word of El. That's in the singular. And fallen down, yet with opened eyes. Well, he's describing the manner in which God was giving him the vision. He would fall into a trance, and God would open his eyes, so to speak, to see visions of God. And that's how he spoke. And so in verse 17, this is what he's saying. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not nigh. Speaking about God. There shall stay forth a star out of Jacob. So speaking about the star that first came in the days of King Herod and appeared to Israel, the deliverer, and then also in specific about the end time. Again, the star of Jacob, that is the one that became the Redeemer of Israel, the Messiah. And he said, and there shall step forth a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite through the corners of Moab. So we're talking today about the Jordanians and their end time fate. And there are many other prophecies that talk about that. And so he says he's going to smite the corners of Moab, and break down all the sons of Seth, all those enemies around Israel that are now against the people of God who happen to be there at the moment, the people of Judah. And he says, verse 19, and out of Jacob shall one have dominion, speaking by the Messiah, and shall destroy the remnant of the city, or from the city. You see, so he's talking about what God is going to do to the people who are now the nations, the enemies of Israel and Moab, that later on became known as the Jordanian people, Moab and Ammon, were still around there. And still, though they have a peace agreement now, you know, for a long time they were enemies and they're going to be enemies again. It's just a temporary peace agreement. And so, now he looks at Amalek in verse 20, the one we're talking about at this point, the grandson of Esau. And he looked on Amalek and took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations. What does it mean, the first of the nations? You see, he being the grandson of Esau, the firstborn of his firstborn, a contender for the birthright, and he says, in essence, look, I've got right on both sides of the Horites. You see, his mother was a Horite, the daughter of Seir the Horite, that controlled the territory that merged with Edom after the war, after Edom or Esau defeated their, you know, this people and then merged with them in an alliance by marriage. And so he feels now that he's got the preeminence over the others. You see, he comes from these two lines, and so he becomes the first of the nations, chief of the nations, so to speak, of Edom, at least in that territory, in that area. The chief contender for the birthright, and he's also the first of the nations of Edom and the Horites that merged, that came against Israel. And he remained there to this very day. And so I said, he is the chief, or he is the first of the nations. But his end shall come to destruction. You see? Just like we read in Exodus chapter 17, where God swore by his own throne. You see, the description there is showing that God stood up on his throne and he swore by his throne that he personally is going to have a war, a holy war, a jihad, if you please, with this particular people of Amalek on a generational basis until he blots them out from under heaven. Now, he commanded his people Israel to be a part of this war against Amalek, but they never did it properly, and therefore they constantly have to fight with Amalek. And to this very day, they are paying the penalty for it. And so we continue the story in Deuteronomy. As they come closer to the land, this is what Moses tells them. He tells them in chapter 25 in Deuteronomy not to forget something that God wants them to remember. Just like he told Moses, you read that in a book and you rehearse it in the ears of Joshua and also for Israel. So they have a job here to do. Because though God is the one proclaiming the war, he wants Israel to be partakers of that fulfillment. And so in chapter 25 of Deuteronomy, in verse 17, this is what Moses tells his people. Remember what Amalek did unto you by the way as you came forth out of Egypt. That's 40 years earlier. And how he met you by the way and smote the hindmost of you and all that were feebled in your rear. When you was faint and weary, and he feared not God. You see? Why should he fear God? Why should he fear the God of Israel? Because you see, he was a relative of Israel. He was the firstborn of Israel. From his firstborn. He knows the God of Israel. Esau at the time still had a relationship with the God of Israel, at least to a degree. He still had a measure of knowledge and understanding of the laws of God. After all, Isaac was his father, and Abraham was his grandfather. You see? He's not too far removed from the knowledge of God. And Amalek should have known that. And he should have feared the God of Israel, and he should have known his will about the birthright. And so you see the manner in which he operates. You see, that's how the terrorists operate. You know, they come in your midst when you are not aware of it, and to this very day you see them. They go after women, they go after children, they go after innocent, they go after the helpless, and they don't face the enemy face to face like an army, in a noble manner, so to speak. And that's a mode of operation and has been always throughout all their generations, and it is to this very day. So God singles out this particular people who are half Edomites, you see, and half Horites, and of course as they merge with the other people of Edom, they become more Edomite, but still they retain their identity in that sense and their distinctiveness, and to this very day they are there. And to this very day Israel has to contend with this problem. And one reason is because when Moses commanded them, because God commanded Israel to do that, and he commanded Moses to remind Israel and to write it in a book and to let Joshua know about it and let the whole nation know about it, that it's something they're going to have to do for the rest of their life on earth, to remember what Amalek did unto them as they came out of Egypt, that did not fear God. And therefore Moses says in verse 19, because of that, because of what Amalek did, because of his aspirations, which are contrary to the law of God, because he's defying God personally, because he's in contempt of God, in contempt of the court of heaven, that has decreed that the land is to be given to Jacob and not to Esau and not to his descendants. And Amalek was defying all that. And therefore he says, it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your enemies round about, speaking about all the Canaanites, you see, when you are finished with all that battle and war, and constant wars there, you know, with all the nations that were there, that God said, you go up there and just wipe them out from under heaven, then this is what you are supposed to do, he says. that you shall blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget. You see, this is what God said when he sworn by his throne. I'm going to have war with Amalek, and obviously he's going to do it through his people Israel. And I'm going to have a war with Amalek from generation to generation. And he told them, you're going to blot them out from under heaven. These people, from God's point of view, are not worthy of existing, of being alive. At least in this phase of life. What's going to happen after that? You know, only God knows. But he says, this is your commission. And on a generational basis, this is what Israel was supposed to do whenever they could, whenever they had to do it. Whenever there were Amalekites around, whenever the Amalekites came and fought against them, and whenever they met their demands, you know, for the land, in one way or the other. They had different ways of doing it. And so it says, you just blot them out from under heaven and don't forget. The problem is, Israel forgot. They did not do what God commanded them to do. And to this very day, they are paying the penalty for it. But you see, the war is not over. And God is still going to do what he said he will. And so, we proceed now to the days of King Saul. Now, the king is over Israel, and God was with him. And he delivered him from the Philistines and all the peoples around, you know, the Moabites and the Ammonites. And so this is the commission that God is giving Saul. And so we read in chapter 15, in verse 1, Samuel also said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Eternal. See, God is speaking here. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel. See, God is not going to ever forget that. And it's not just because Amalek went down and he went after the weaklings among the children of Israel, you know, the women and those who were faint and weary and all things like that, or the children. That goes beyond that. It's because of what Amalek is all about. It's because of what Amalek wants. It's because of the contempt that he has for the will of God. It is because he's defying God. You see? About the birthright. It's because of his ancestry as the firstborn or the firstborn of Esau and the contender for the birthright that God already decided and determined that it is going to be given to Jacob. You see, Amalek was never willing to acknowledge that. And Edom also to this very day is not willing to acknowledge that. That is a part of him that is still in the area. And that's a part of the origin of the conflict. And the Middle East, that's still going on. That's why they're all fighting for the same land, the same, you know, capital of Jerusalem. And so God says, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. And so he says now to King Saul, now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. And do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, infant, a nursing, child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. This is what is called nowadays genocide. You see? It sounds very harsh. And that's exactly what was the fate also of all the nations that were in Canaan. When Moses sent them over there and told them, you are going to commit a genocide, you know, from today's point of view, modern nation's point of view, you're going to totally blot out everybody from under heaven. You know, as Moses told them, you shall leave nothing that breathes, you see, that is of the nations of the land, not for the nations around them. And Amalek was the only outside nation of the Canaanites that fell under the same category also. And God had a personal war with this man. And you have to understand why. And when you comprehend that he was a chief contender for the birthright and would never give up on that, and to this very day is not willing to give up on that, he is in essence sealing his own fate by his own conduct and his own attitude. And unfortunately, this is what is facing the people who to this very day are doing the same thing to the people of Israel in the land of Israel and are contending for the same birthright that God gave Jacob and not to Esau. This is their fate. And they don't realize that. And God is the one who is going to execute the final battle and war and penalty. And he's going to use his people Israel to do it. You can read in Isaiah chapter 11, among other places. But we're going to have more on that. And so Saul went to war, and he, in essence, destroyed an awful lot of the Amalekites, as we read in verse 7. And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt, so speaking by the south, the southern border, you know, southern eastern border of Israel. And he also took Agag, this is a very important person to remember, he also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive. So Agag was like a pharaoh, it was a title. You see, it was not a name of a person, a personal name, it was a title of a person. And anybody who ascended to that office, his name was always called Agag. Like a pharaoh, like, you know, you find Abimelech also among the children of the Philistines. That was also a title that was passed on. And so he took him alive instead of destroying him. But he utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. And Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep. And so God gave him a very simple instruction, very plain one. You go and totally decimate them. You see, that's a holy war. That's the nature of a holy war. You spare nobody. Nobody's life is going to be spared, not even their animals. You see, that's the reason why you see this concept of the holy war that is still proposed from now, you know, now and then by the Arabs. Generally, they use it against the people of Israel, the people of Judah in particular. And so, he hasn't done that. And God was very angry with it. And because of that, he lost the kingdom. See, that's when God rejected him. And so we're at the end of the story here. Everybody's full, you know, familiar with the story about Samuel and his anger at Saul and what happened after that. And then you see at the end of the chapter that God is going to execute his vengeance and anger against Amalek through his prophet Samuel, since Saul didn't do it, and he was symbolic of Israel. You know, they were guilty also. They spared some of the animals. They spared, you know, certain things there, and Saul did too. And so that was the problem always with Israel. They were not willing to totally heed the voice of God and do exactly what he said, to commit a total genocide against these people. You know, people think that they know better than God. And they don't realize what they're dealing with. That if you don't do it once, like with cancer, if you don't get rid of it once, it's always going to be there to haunt you. It'll come back. You see? And Israel never understood it. And they never comprehended the full scope of the story here, of what is really happening here with Agag and the birthright and the constant problems they are going to have with these people. And so Samuel, we read here in verse 31, so Samuel turned back after Saul, and Saul worshipped the Lord. And then in verse 32, then Samuel said, bring Agag, king of the Amalekites, here to me. So Agag came to him cautiously, and Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. He thought he was going to be spared also by the prophet. That was not the will of God. And Samuel was carrying the will of God and the emotions and feelings of God, and you see how he's going to do it. But Samuel said, as your sword has made women childless. You see? That's how the Amalekites always function. And so he said, as your sword has made women childless, which they still do to this very day, so shall your mother be childless among women. And Samuel, you know, the prophet of God, executing the vengeance of God, this is what he does. Samuel hacked Agag in pieces. It isn't just killing. You know, the sword, sticking in his heart, and that's the end of it. He cut him in pieces. And you wouldn't understand that unless you realize the whole story. Those were the feelings of God. That's how he felt. And this is what inspired Samuel to do. And so the very feelings and emotions of God and the anger and the fury of God, you see, were functioning here. And through Samuel, God let Agag and the Amalekites know how he feels about them because of what they've done to his people, because of their constant contention for the birthright, because they are defying him personally. You see? And this is a part of the story. And then we go now to the Psalms, where we read more about this matter. And at this point, we have a prophecy here that has basically several applications, but an ultimate one, and that is modern day, latter times, the end of times, between the people of God and the Amalekites and all their enemies around them. And so through the prophet and musician of the temple, Asaph, this is what God is recording in chapter 83, and here is a very graphic description, in essence, of what is happening today. Why do we have a Middle East conflict? And so Asaph is saying that in Psalm 83, a song of Asaph. Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace. And do not be still, O God, for behold, your enemies. You see, these are not just the enemies of Israel. Anybody who is an enemy of Israel is an enemy of God, especially when Israel is righteous. And God is not the one that brought those enemies against him, but of their own free will. They choose to be enemies of Israel. They hate Israel. And of course also, because of the wickedness, God also allows the enemy to rise against them. But they also have the personal hatred against Israel. And so he says, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you. You see? That's a personal thing. They don't realize it, but they hate you. They hate your will. They hate your decree. You see, they don't acknowledge your prerogative to give the land to whomsoever you want. So they are your enemies who hate you. So those who hate you, and he's inspired by God to say that. This is, the Spirit of God speaking through him. He's expressing the emotions and feelings of God about these people around Judah nowadays, as well as in the past. But specifically, we see today. And so he says, those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people, as they've done many times in the past. But he's talking about also the ultimate one, and this is what we see today. And since, the 48-year war, and before that, that's exactly what was happening. All those enemies of Israel, who are relatives of Israel, ironically, were not willing to acknowledge that the land belongs to the children of Israel, even though their own prophet, who read the scriptures, recognized that and told them that God gave the land to Isaac and not to Ishmael. You see, but here we find also, not only Ishmael, we find many other people involved in that, and people who have never given up on that. You see? And so he said, they have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones, your hidden ones, the one that you brought back, from destruction and captivity. And this is what they said, he said, in verse 4. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation. That's exactly what was happening more than 50 years ago. And this is exactly what was going on through their hearts all these many years to this very day. Even though, supposedly, they are trying to make peace with Israel, in their heart, they still want a total destruction of Israel, and they say it very plainly. Their feelings and emotions have never been changed, and God knows them. You see, that's why he's inspiring that to be written in this manner. And so they say, and this is what they feel, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. You see, God said that the name of Amalek will be remembered no more. And they're telling God, oh yeah? This is what we're going to do to your people. Your people is going to be no more. See? And that's what, this statement has been made, driving the Jews into the sea at the same time. They totally want to blot them out from under heaven. That's their intention. They don't want them alive. They don't want the name Israel. You see, that's why they call it Palestine. They want that name blotted out from under heaven. You see? And he continues in verse 5, "For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you." No, against you, God, not only against Israel. Now they think that they worship Allah, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham. They think that they do His will. They think that it is the will of God, you know, on their part, to declare a jihad, a holy war against the people of Israel. You see how warped and perverted their minds are. Because there is a spirit up there that is doing it to them. And so the form of confederacy, and they've done it for the, you know, for the past many decades, and they're going to continue to do it. And their aim is the total decimation of the people of Israel. You see? Just what God has said that He's going to do to them. And anyway, we're going to stop at this point here and continue next time. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.